Welcome to the Tailored Life Podcast. This is the fitness and nutrition podcast that goes way beyond just training and nutrition and helps you create a life by design. I am your host, Cody McBroom. I am a father, a husband, a sports nutritionist, and an online trainer, and the founder and CEO of Tailored Coaching Method and the Tailored Trainer, a training app that delivers daily workouts to you and a coaching company that works with people worldwide. This podcast is literally 100% dedicated to helping people personally develop for free. This is a free podcast where I spend hours and hours of my time every week making sure that we can deliver free content to you. And I say that to say, take advantage. That isn't to impress you. It's not anything like that. It's to impress upon you that there's just so much here that you should be taking a hold of and taking advantage of. I truly believe that, you know, the purpose, there, in my mind, there's two prime purposes of life, and that the one is to serve others. I truly believe that one of the most important aspects and one of the biggest purposes of everybody's life is to serve others. But I think a big piece of being able to do that, as well as the other purpose of life, the other reason we have time on this earth, is for expansion. And by expansion, I mean to get better, to be better, to do better, and to become better, become more. So that's what this podcast is about. That's what the idea of the tailored life is. The tailored life is it's a life by design. So it's, you know, work hard, dream big, and live according to how you want to live. Now, today, it's Q&A. I feel like I haven't done a Q&A in quite a while. In fact, I know I haven't because we haven't aired one in a while. We actually took a break 1 week off of the podcast, which was much needed, if I'm being completely transparent. But also, it was, it's just been so crazy. We had the tailored, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a update on my life for a sec, whether you want it or not. The Tailored Coaching Method Masterclass was here, and oh my gosh, I feel like I'm still recovering. Like, it's so much energy being poured out into those events. Like, it's just insane. It's just unbelievable. It was such a good time. People were so impacted, and it's so humbling, and it's such an honor to lead that group, knowing that there was people from, we had people from, I believe Florida, Boston, I think Atlanta out here. I want to say Jersey, some people from Washington, Oregon, Cali. Like, it was just insane. You know, it's crazy to think that many people from all around, you know, and it wasn't cheap. It wasn't cheap. And it was very exclusive. And flights nowadays are so ridiculously expensive. So it was an expensive trip for these people to do, but it was so cool, so impactful. We got to help a lot of people there, which is cool because I'm helping them help more people, right? So this is how I spread my web. And, you know, the whole purpose of Tailored Coaching Method, the company and my team, our mission, you know, it's to help average people live above average lives by teaching them how to be an above average individual. And we start that process by going through the physical transformation. I often talk about this stuff with my team. I call it the self formation. Don't try to steal it, because I'm in the process of making that mine. And there's going to be a lot of stuff I build around it, because it's just such a cool concept to me. You know, in order to transform the self, mentally, physically, spiritually, physiologically, however you want to look at it, it requires a lot of self-work, which includes the traits of self-discipline, self-willpower, self-control, ultimately removing self-doubt so that you can have more self-belief and accomplish goals and transformation, which turns into self-respect because you've done the work and you've accomplished the thing, and then now you have self-appreciation. Right, so we've built up self-belief, removed self-doubt, and increased our self-discipline, our self-willpower, grit, determination, belief. Like, I mean, it's endless, right? The self, everything. It's just so cool. And I watched this happen, and we talked so much about standards there. We talked about advanced strategies to lose fat. And the coolest part about all of it to me was that my coaches who attended and were able to come out, and I have no doubt, full faith that anybody on my team would be able to do this, were able to step in and answer the questions. You know, they literally could contribute and be experts in the room without planning that or without being called to it, just being able to jump in. And shout out to Ryan. There was one point, one of the attendees, he's also a client of mine, Ryan, he turned around and he raised his hand. I go, yeah, what's up? Like, we're doing Q&A. And he turned around and asked Hallie a question, one of the coaches on my staff. And I'm like, damn, he doesn't even want to ask me a question. which was really cool because the fact that he was asking coaching advice and questions to one of my coaches instead of me just shows how powerful our team is, right? So anyway, I don't have like a form or anything like that, but if you attended, thank you for attending. Any feedback is always great. If you didn't attend and now you're wishing you did, shoot me an email, cody@tailoredcoachingmethod.com. I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to know why you want to attend, and I'd love to let you know that we're probably going to do it again. In fact, I know we're going to do it again because we have a lot of plans in that realm of helping coaches, but I want to be able to, start planning ahead and start getting people ready to do that kind of thing, you know? So anyway, today's a Q&A. I'm going to start with a small section. I'm also going to open my rock star. I should be like a spokesperson. I spend enough money on these things. I want to start this podcast with a little bit of insight. You know, I think, you know, I'm naturally such an introspective person. I read every day. I journal every day. I have deep conversations with either my wife, some of my close friends, somebody on my team, one of my clients. Like there's just, it never fails. I have a deep conversation with somebody. I journal every day. I do all these things, which I think is a very powerful part of life. And I wrote down four things to live a purposeful life. Like how to live a truly purposeful, purpose-driven, meaningful life. And I want to share that. And I think it would be a cool way to start these Q&As is like, if I have this insight, like I'm going to dive into this topic for a brief moment, and then we're going to answer some training and nutrition questions, because the next episode is, you know, an interview. One of the episodes every week is going to be an interview. One of them is a solo show, and it's not enough time for me to share all my thoughts on one episode. So I want to split it up. And so this first section of the podcast, we're going to call How to Live a Purposeful Life. And I truly believe that there's four components to living a purposeful life. And I do not think they go in order. So although there is one, two, three, four things, I'm going to say them in the order I wrote them down, but do not get it twisted. These are not in sequence as the way to go about them, because the truth is whichever one of these things really clicks, sparks the flame, ignites the motivation, or triggers you because you're like, I don't focus on that thing, that means that that's the thing that is most important. So I'm going to go through these components of how to live a purposeful life. And I want you to listen for what triggers you the most, not necessarily triggers you as it offends you, but I mean, if it does, great. There's some deep rooted stuff that you need to work through. But regardless, whatever the thing that really calls out to you and grabs you, I want you to let it latch on you. And I want you to focus on developing that thing. And you might listen to this and be like, all four of those things I need to work on. Great. Which one do you need to work on most, or which one's the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit? Go for that first, work on the easiest thing, and then build it from there. Right. So how to live a purposeful life in four specific steps, four specific ways. I'm stuttering a bit today. The first component in living a purposeful life is challenging yourself, because it creates a sense of accomplishment, and there's a component of accountability involved in challenging yourself, right? And in fact, you know what? I'm gonna backtrack. I'm gonna tell you the four things real quick. Sorry, I'm all over the place today. I'm gonna tell you the four things, and this is how you know it's a podcast. It's real. It's raw. We don't go back. I don't edit these. It's just all off the cuff. Most people would probably take all this out, but I like you guys hearing this stuff because this is how real conversations go. This is unscripted, unedited. I have four bullet points and some questions that I'm gonna answer, and I just go off and just start talking. Anyway, four ways to living a purposeful life. This is how you live a purposeful life in four ways. You need to challenge yourself. You need to create quality relationships. You need to serve others by being a go-giver. And you need to have something bigger than you, an eternal goal, eternal purpose, eternal life, a higher power, something larger than you. Whether you are religious or not, that's not what this is about. If you are a believer in God or the universe or Buddha or Gandhi, whatever your thing is, that's fine. That's your thing. That's okay. But this is backed on research. This is backed on anecdote. This is backed on experience. I believe in God. That's my higher power. That's what I believe is true. However, the point is that I have a higher power guiding me. I have a bigger picture than me. I also have something that is purpose-driven that is so much larger than Cody McBroom. It's tailored coaching method. It's even bigger than that. It's the tailored life. It's the purpose-driven blueprint, you could call it, behind the company and behind me that matters so much, right? So there always has to be a bigger picture is the point. Challenge yourself, have quality relationships, serve others, eternal life, or higher power that drives you. Now, challenging yourself, it creates accomplishment and it creates accountability. It also develops almost all the traits you need in order to be successful. The reality of today is that everybody's striving for the easy fix, the quick fix, the simple thing. They're looking for convenience. I get it. Nobody likes being uncomfortable. Everybody likes things handed to them. Everybody likes things to be for free or for cheap, or they don't want to invest their time, money, effort. I get it. I like free, quick, simple, easy things too. It feels great. However, the result that comes from any of those things is just never as good. It really isn't, right? Like, this podcast is free and that's great. And I love that. And I mentioned that at the beginning of the podcast, you should grab onto that and utilize that. So there's free things that you should use, but you need to challenge yourself with something specific. You need to invest money, you need to invest time, and you need to invest effort. When you do those three things, not only does the challenge become more likely to be accomplished because you have skin in the game, you have accountability, right? You have invested in it. Nobody wants to lose their money, and there's research to prove this. You could pay for a dollar. It's not about the amount necessarily. For some people, it can be that. Once you become more and more wealthy, the more you spend, the more accountable you are, because you don't feel the less money leaving. But the point is if you have skin in the game, if you have invested something, you are more likely to accomplish it because there's eternal accountability going on in your head and in your heart. So the first step in living a purposeful life is to challenge yourself, not only because it creates accountability to get better, but during the challenges that you face, and the keyword there is face, the challenges you face because you are willing to face them, you are literally walking into the resistance intentionally. Those challenges are going to create grit, discipline, motivation from internal sources, not external sources. They are going to develop willpower. They are going to develop self-control. They are going to develop the power of introspection, which means you are able to slow down and really try to pull lessons out of things and think deeper. You're going to challenge yourself. You're going to do hard things. This is why we talk about doing hard stuff all the time. It's why we create life changing transformations, is because when people go through the physical, we tap into their mental as well. And part of that transformation process, aesthetically or physically or visually, the things required to accomplish that will change who you are as a person, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. Like, it just, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. So the first step in truly living a purposeful life is that you have to regularly challenge yourself. You have to be willing to accept challenge, and you have to really walk into that resistance, challenging yourself so that you grow, you get stronger in all these aspects I'm talking about, and you develop the traits of a successful individual. Next, we have having quality relationships. And I would even add to that in saying less relationships that are higher quality. You don't need to be friends with 500 people. You need to be friends with 5 people and have deep and meaningful relationships with them. I can't tell you how much more I value the friendships and the people in my life, the less people in my life there are, right? And that's just it's a natural, most people listen to this, you'll understand too, because you get it. It's part of life. You as you grow up and as you have more responsibility, you build a family, things happen and people come and go, right? That's just part of life. But the people that stay are the people that mean the most. And the longer you really develop with somebody, the more interests you have with that person, the more commonalities, the more things you see eye to eye with them on, the more likely it is that you're going to build a tighter and tighter bond with that person. You're going to have more mutual respect. You're going to have more mutual gratitude and appreciation, more mutual love. And honestly, you're going to continue to see yourself being involved with that person. And there's a lot of research that shows people who have meaningful relationships actually live longer in life. However, there's also research that shows you can only have so many meaningful relationships. There's literally research, and I don't know if off the top of my head, I think you can only truly know somebody, and when they define by know somebody, it's like you actually know them. You're not just acquaintances or know who they are. I remember their name. Like, you actually know the person, right, on a deeper level. I think it's 100. Like, you can't know more than 100 people personally. And then to be, like, even closer to them and have, like, a tight-knit relationships, it's even more finite. It's probably, like, 10 people, 10 to 20. I don't know what it is, honestly. I have no idea. It's less than 50, though. I do know that. So when we consider that, relationships are a key factor in living a longer, happier, more fulfilling life. And you can only have so many meaningful relationships while maintaining your own self relationship, right? Relationship with yourself, doing stuff for yourself, being healthy, work, whatever it is, personal development. It just goes to show you that you have to focus on quality, not quantity. It's a really, really big thing. So you should be looking for friends that aren't just acquaintances. They're really, truly people that you want to spend life with. Think about that. Number three, serving others. Be a go-giver. I truly believe that serving others is one of the most important aspects of life. And to be honest with you, the biggest thing here is that when you serve others, it creates gratitude in yourself. It creates more motivation to do more in life for you. And that's like the big thing that I'm trying to get across, is that it's not necessarily about, and this sounds selfish, and it is in a way, it's not always about the other person. So me doing something for you and your life improving because of the thing I did doesn't necessarily make my life more meaningful. However, if I'm serving you and you get better, the act of me serving you, whether that changes your life or not, that action does create more meaning in my life. And if I change your life through the way I'm serving you, it's even more meaningful. And obviously, I'm very, very biased because I'm a coach, and that's what we do. We create transformations of people. We get really close to our clients. We get really close to a lot of people, including the people on my team. Those are very, very meaningful relationships that are all based around creating change. So this is, I'm biased to these things. However, it's true. It's in every single industry. It's in every religious text. It's in every philosophical text, statements, quotes, books. You can't get away from it. Serving others is such a valuable and massive piece. So if you're not serving others, if you're not being a go-giver, look at your life. Try to figure out how can I serve others more? How can I help people more? Because that's how you get appreciation for others and yourself, right? That's how you develop respect from others, and ultimately how you really build gratitude and appreciation for yourself, because you're doing good things and you're a good person, right? And as much as it sounds like I'm saying you're doing things for other people for yourself, it's kind of true. But it's that important. It creates meaning in your life. And number four, eternal life or a higher power. You have to have something bigger than you. There is research on individuals being more likely to survive breast cancer. There's a really good study on breast cancer survivors and women, and they're more likely to survive breast cancer if they believe in something greater than them, if they believe in a higher power. And this was this study showed multiple religions. So it's not even about what religion you believe in. It's about believing in something more than what you're doing right now, more than the planet you're standing on, more than just the body you're in. It goes far, far beyond that. There's meaning and purpose and order, and there's just so much more. And if you believe in that and you truly live life that way, you're going to have more meaning in your life. You're going to be more likely to survive disease. You're going to be less likely to be stressed. You're going to be a more positive person. You're going to have less worry, less overwhelm, less likely to get anxious or depressed. Like, these are all backed by research too. Like, literally, you will be in a healthier mental state if you believe in something bigger than yourself, right? And the cool thing about that is that can be taken in many ways. I know what it means to me. I know for a fact what that means to me, but that's all that matters for my own health, mentally, in my own life, right? So how to live a purposeful life, challenge yourself, have quality relationships, serve others, and believe in eternal life and a higher power. And by eternal life, I mean a life bigger than you, a life more meaningful than you, and a purpose to do life more than just the day-to-day, make money, go home, sleep, wake up, do it again, like the bullshit, right? So some introspection from me to start this podcast. Now we're going to dive into questions. So not to take a complete left turn, but we're going to talk about fitness and nutrition, which I also like talking about. And again, I realize that I take a lot of notes and I share these. We have a weekly meeting as a staff, and a lot of times my notes from the week and from my journaling, they go into the staff meetings. And it's a Monday meeting to just ramp up everybody, get people going, talk about the direction we're heading, talk about what are the non-negotiables this week, what do we need to accomplish this week, so on and so forth. But a lot of times I bring those into there, and that's all they serve as, that and like deep conversations with my wife or my good friend Cody Smith, because that's one of the people I tend to jump on a phone call with and talk about life with. And I want to share them on here. I think there's going to be a lot of life, discipline, business, and fitness, parenting, even relationship insights, lessons, and just guidance by just the little tidbits I throw into the beginning of these episodes if I continue to do this. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you liked it. And if not, you totally could have skipped forward and just listened to the Q&A section, because I'm going to make sure these are timestamped in the episode show notes. That being said, we're going to dive into some questions. So these questions actually came from Instagram. I did a Q&A on my Instagram, which I haven't done in a long time, and I picked like five or six of them, and we're going to try to run through them. So the first one, it says, what and when are the signs to drop deficit calories even further to continue progress during a mini cut? So basically, at what point should you look to drop your calories when you're in a cut is the gist of it. And they specifically said a mini cut, which I'll get into. I'll get into that first, actually. Understanding what a mini cut is the first and most important thing before implementing a quote-unquote mini cut. A mini cut is defined typically as at least, I would say, 5 weeks. I guess some people could get away with doing a mini cut for a month, so 4 weeks, upwards of 10 at most. Usually it's like a 4 to 8 week period of time. Otherwise, you're just doing a full cut, which is why we usually, like if we say 4 to 8, the average is 6. Most people I've seen use it, most people I've used it with, which isn't very often because that's not typically what we do. It's like a 4 to 6 range, right? The reason we don't do that very often is because the people that work with us, we're really aiming to create life-changing transformations. A mini cut, in my opinion, isn't the best approach. I think it's very rare that somebody should use a mini cut. And I'll give you the best example of when to use a mini cut based on my own personal plans. I will be doing a mini cut probably, let's see, it is March, so maybe fall, summer. I got to talk to my coach, but that's going to be like a midway point of my bulk, right? At that point, we're like past the 6 month mark. And the long-term gaining strategy and plan is about a year and a half before I'll start prepping for stage, which means that midway through the bulk, assuming I've gained a good amount of weight and probably spilt over a little bit as in I put on a little bit too much body fat during the bulking phase. If I'm at that point, a mini cut is a great way to pull back and make sure that I can just kind of trim off a layer of fat, for lack of better terms, and make sure I'm still lean enough for a healthy gaining phase. We don't want a dirty bulk. We don't want to like gain weight and muscle at such a rate that we're productively putting on muscle tissue and training hard, but we're also putting on a decent amount of body fat at the same time. And that's obviously not what we want to do. So if we're approaching this from a standpoint of, hey, we want to make sure that we stay healthy, we want to stay lean while gaining, but not so lean that we're not making progress, just lean enough to stay healthy, then about midway is a good point to test out a mini cut to make sure that we're shaving off a little bit of fat and keeping ourselves in that lean range. Because you have to push the threshold during a bulk in order to really see your maximal potential growth rate on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis. However, usually that means you're kind of flirting with that line of how much is too much, right? And so at some point you do a mini cut. Now, on the flip side, even if you don't get quote-unquote fat during a bulk and you do still plan on doing a cut in the future, if it's a serious timeline or deadline like mine, I'm going to get on stage again, so it's a competitive thing, we would also do a mini cut even if I didn't put on too much fat, just to test my body's responsiveness. So it's a good way to like do a cut and test how my body responds to a calorie deficit in that state before we actually go into a full-blown prep for stage, right? So it's just like a test run, lack of better terms, right? And when we do a lot of times, if we have enough time, we don't always do this. If you're ahead of the game, you can do a mock peak week as well. It's the same thing. It's like, okay, let's say a month out from the show. Let's run a peak week just to test things. We already accomplished the goal. We're going to be able to reverse diet into stage. Now we're going to test a peak week strategy so that we can see where we're at. Again, this is restricted to bodybuilding, right? And that's why we don't really use it very often as a company. And so I see a lot of people misuse mini cuts by they get sloppy with their diet and their training and they fall off and then they go, I just need a mini cut and it'll dial me back in. Well, the answer to getting consistent and staying lean is not to do a mini cut. If you're doing a mini cut to try to get back in shape because you let yourself go, you need to establish habits and consistency and probably have some accountability and figure out a plan that's more sustainable and probably more flexible so that you can slowly get back to your leaner self and stay there. Not do a harsh cut that, yes, will work because you're cutting very aggressively, but it's completely unsustainable and you can't wait for it to be done. And then you dive right back in to your normal habits, which just leads to more gaining of weight. And now you're back in the same place, right? And now you're doing a mini cut a few times a year to just kind of always be beach ready, so to speak. That's not the answer, right? If you find yourself running to a mini cut because you feel like you let yourself go or you overdid it, that is not the right thing to do, right? A mini cut is reserved for people who are bulking and need to just trim up or test out how their body is responding before something like a physique competition prep. Or it's for somebody who stays within striking distance of their goal, which is a great way to approach it. You hire a coach, you get to your goal, and then you sustain that goal, right? You get to a goal that is lean but sustainable, and then you stay within striking distance, which means, hey, in a matter of 2 to 4 weeks, I could drop calories into deficit, shave off a few pounds, and I'm right back where I was if I got to go to the beach, right? And it's literally like, oh yeah, it's not a big deal. I want to look great at the beach, so I'm going to cut, but I know that I'm also going to have beers on the beach for 3 days straight at this trip, and then I'm probably going to put that weight right back on. Sweet. If you want to do a cut for 2, 3, maybe even 4 weeks because you just want to look good for an event and you know that you're going to put it back on afterwards, there's no harm in that. There's no shame in that. Like, I would do it too. That's totally fine. You're within striking distance and you're happy being in striking distance, right? Just don't get upset when you put a little bit of that weight back on. Now, to answer the actual question, what are the signs to drop deficit calories even further to continue progress? You know, there's a few things. There's a few things that you want to think of or look for when it comes to progressing a diet further. So if you are in a fat loss diet and you're wondering, at which point am I really at a plateau? Like, what is a full stall? What is a plateau? What is slowed progress? And even more detailed, how slow of progress is acceptable, right? Because if progress is slowed down, that's natural. But at what point is it too slow and I need to make an adjustment? So the red flags you really want to look for are no weight loss at all. So ideally, you're losing between 0.5 to 1, maybe even 1.5% for a little bit, but you don't want to prolong that too long, percent of total body weight loss per week. So if you're 200 pounds, that's going to be anywhere between 1 to 2.5 pounds. You're probably going to hang out in that 1 to 2 pound range most weeks. When you get to a point where your weight stops losing at a rate of 0.5% per week, you know you're approaching a stall or a plateau, and it's probably a good point to adjust. Now, if, for example, that 200-pound person is losing 1 to 2 pounds and then they hit 0.5 pounds, at first, you don't just want to jump ship and adjust the diet right away, right? We don't want to just prematurely drop calories even lower and put ourselves in a bad position. What we do want to do is look at all other variables. Okay, this is week one of a plateau. You've only lost about a half a pound, which is totally fine. We're not going to adjust this week. That's still good. It might be a fluke and you might get back to losing 1 to 2 pounds per week starting again next week. But just to make sure that we actually do, let's literally just cross our T's and dot our I's. Have you been weighing in every single day at the same time of day after using the bathroom without anything to eat or drink? Yes. Okay, cool. Have you been drinking all your water? Yes. Have you been getting enough fiber? Yes. Have you had any stress, whether that is relationship stress, it's work stress, it's training stress? Are you super sore from training? Did we implement a new program? Like, any type of random stress variable that gets thrown in, has any of that happened in these last couple weeks? No. Okay. Are you hitting your macros consistently within, you know, plus or minus 5 to 10 grams of protein and carbs and plus or minus 3 to 5 grams of fat? Yes. Okay. We're golden. You're hitting your steps. Are you getting your sleep? Like, you just really just check off all your boxes. If you're consistent across the board, it's probably time to adjust. I would give yourself that week because sometimes it's a fluke. And if the next week you're still not losing in that 0.5 to 1% range, it's time to drop calories. And you would want to drop your calories by about 5 to 10%. Usually I lean on 5 because at this point of the diet, you're not trying to make too big of jumps in the deficit. You just want to nudge it along and keep it moving, especially because you haven't stalled out. You haven't completely plateaued. Weight loss has just slowed down, right? And even if you do stall, if your weight loss comes to a screeching halt, it's the same exact thing. Look at all your variables, your biofeedback, right? Is your stress good? Is your sleep good? Is your digestion good? Is your all your health markers, are they all good? Are you training hard in the gym? Are you getting your steps? Are you doing all the things? If biofeedback is good and you're checking all your boxes, meaning you're doing all the things and you're within range of the targets that you have set out to hit, you're good. Then you need to adjust your diet by 5 to 10% to continue the progress. A lot of times there's people who we will go through this checklist and something pops up, at least one, if not two. They're like, honestly, I haven't been very good at XYZ. So as a coach, if I can dive into the details and I can look at their diet, I can ask the right questions, I can make sure they're checking off all the boxes, instead of me dropping their calories further, knowing that their adherence isn't there, I'm going to attack the adherence. Hey, let's make this easier or more sustainable for you. Let's figure out a way to make sure that you're actually adhering to the diet. And when we do that, I can almost guarantee you're going to break through that plateau almost instantly, right? And so when we get that buy-in and that motivation from the client to agree and commit to improving on the things that they're not dialed in on, they breeze through that plateau and that stall in their weight loss, and they continue moving along without having to drop calories. Right? So those are the two scenarios of whether you would or you wouldn't drop calories during a calorie deficit to continue progress going on. Okay, next question is taking actual rest days versus active recovery days. Is it okay to just do nothing? It is 100% okay to just do nothing. If you feel bad for not going to the gym and working out, you got a problem because your body needs rest too. I love training. Shit, I live in the gym basically. Like on the other side of this wall is literally a gym. I have no excuse not to work out, and I still take 2 rest days every single week. Why? Because just like I need a weekend off work, I need a couple days off the gym. You need at least one. I would highly recommend taking one. Now, do you want to do active recovery days? Of course, you can absolutely do active recovery days. Those are fine. And usually that, you know, that's often what it is for me too. My daughter wants to play. She wants to go outside. I take the dog for a walk, which is not active recovery. I have a fat English bulldog who's super cute, but not the most active person, right? Not the most active dog. We call him our son, but you know. Anyway, I take some active recovery days at times. Maybe I'll go on a walk. Maybe I'll do something like that. And I typically walk on the treadmill every single day. Not every single day. About 5 days a week, so about the same. But it's not always on the same days as my training, so I typically end up doing something every day of the week. But 20 to 25 minutes walking on a treadmill while I'm doing something else just to get my steps up, just to have my heart rate up a little bit, get a sweat, that's not training really hard. My point is simple. Can you take 100% rest day? Absolutely. In fact, I would encourage most people, if you feel like you don't need any rest whatsoever during the week, at least one day, I would say that you're not training hard enough. Because even myself, I've been training a long time and I still can't train 6 days a week. I can't do 6 lifting days for very long before I'm just too beat up, right? And here's the thing, as you get more advanced, you get stronger and you get more capable of firing and exhausting and really pushing your muscles to the limit and to the higher threshold, right? As hard as you can. And the reality behind that is pretty simple. It's more taxing. It's more fatiguing. You're going to get more out of that session, obviously. So it's harder to train 6-7 days a week. So you need more rest the stronger you get. But I can train 5 days a week very successfully. 6 days I could for a little bit, and then I burn out, so I can't do it for very long. But there's a lot of people who want to be in the gym 7 days a week. If you can be in the gym 7 days a week, you're just not training hard enough, you know? So number one, you should never feel guilty for taking a rest day off. Like weekends and vacations, all that shit, it matters for a reason. It's created for a reason. It's because anything we do, we can't do it day after day after day after day, week after week, month after month without burning out. So you need time off just as much as you need time on. And that's actually when you recover. And time away makes the heart grow fonder. You'll love the gym that much more if you take some time off. I promise you. So you shouldn't feel guilty. You should never feel guilty for not going to the gym. And you should never feel like you should be doing more from a days per week and time perspective. But if you feel like you can go to the gym 7 days a week, I would have you consider that you're not training hard enough. I think most people who say, I don't even need a rest day, I could be in the gym 7 days a week. Unless you're talking about going to the gym and doing some foam rolling and like walking on a treadmill or like just stretching 1 or 2 days a week and the rest are lifting, you're just not training hard enough in your sessions and you need to push the intensity and push the effort a little bit further. So that's how I feel about that. Damien Figs, my man, he has 3 really good questions. We'll start with this one. This one's simple. What's the number one fitness book you'd recommend to coaches or trainers? The number one fitness book is really hard because whenever somebody says fitness, I'm like, what do you really mean here? Are we talking body composition, fat loss, transformation, nutrition, training, like anything? Or is this strictly one versus the other? I usually like consider them as I'm talking either training or I'm talking nutrition, right? Fitness is like a category. So when it comes to nutrition, I'd probably say fat loss forever. I really like Alan Aragon's new book, Flexible Dieting, as well. But Lane Norton's book, Fat Loss Forever, I think is just really well written. And it's put together really well. There's a lot of good categories and aspects they put together. And the way they put it together, it just flows. It just works super, super well. And then as far as training goes, that is actually way harder. There's so many more good nutrition books than there is training books, to be honest with you, because most training books are more on the physiology versus the actual program design. Programming is like an art. So it's a toss-up for me between Scientific Principles of Hypertrophy by Renaissance Periodization, mainly Mike Isertel, but James Hoffman and Jared Feather are in there too, and Scientific Principles of Hypertrophy. I just said that. No. What is it? Science and Development of Hypertrophy. No. Science and Development of Muscle? Hypertrophy? Hip? Hip-hop? Hip-hop Anonymous? Have you ever seen Big Daddy? You know, you're a dad when you say jokes just to laugh by yourself. I'm in a room by myself and I'm laughing. But anyway, Because I do that at home. I make jokes for myself to laugh, and the girls don't laugh. That is a book by Brad Schoenfeld. So Dr. Brad Schoenfeld, it's either called, it's Science and Development of Muscle, or it's Science and Development of Hypertrophy, or it's the development of, or maybe it's the Science of Muscle Development. I don't know. I have no idea. There's two of them. 2.0 is the updated version, just with newer research. It's great. It's phenomenal. I love that book. And Scientific Principles of Hypertrophy is the one by Renaissance Periodization, which is also a really, really good book. So those would be my fitness ones. Fat Loss Forever would be my nutrition one. What do you feel as though most coaches are lacking today in the fitness industry? I think most coaches are lacking in the fitness industry today. Honestly, the practical application. I think the problem with most coaches in the industry today is that they're way more likely to be keyboard warriors than they are actual training and nutrition enthusiasts who want to be a good coach. I think there's so many people out there that don't practice what they preach. And unfortunately, whether people get triggered by it or not, or they get upset about it or not, the reality is if you're a trainer, if you're a nutrition coach, if you're a fitness enthusiast, if you're a fitness professional, you should look the part, you should practice what you should preach, and you should be always pushing yourself. Because yes, you can be a textbook person, you can know the science, you can know the research, you can go to school for kinesiology, but I promise you, when a client hires you, if you don't look the part, they're gonna assume what you do doesn't work. Part of business and successful businesses is perception. Whether you like it or not, you have to accept that. The second part of it is 50% or more of what gets clients results has nothing to do with training and nutrition science. It has everything to do with the mindset that is required in order to do the work of the training and nutrition. When it gets hard, do they have discipline? Do they have willpower? Do they have the grit? Do they have ambition? Do they have self-belief? Do they eliminate self-doubt? Are they willing to get uncomfortable? Are they willing to sweat? Are they willing to have some pain in their muscle when they're training really hard? Are they allowed to ready to push the boundaries, right? Like, you don't have to be David Goggins for this to even be applicable either. I'm not saying like this is so hardcore that you got to be ready, like, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, brother, pain, no gain, like whatever. No, that's not what I'm saying here. I'm saying that you have to have some discipline to be successful. You have to have some self-control in order to actually follow a diet. Because there's going to be times where you intuitively want to eat like shit. You want to eat junk. You want the thing you're craving, but you can't if you want the result. The result has to matter more than the craving in the moment, which means you need self-control. You have to have willpower to get through those moments. And who am I as a coach if I don't do things myself that require discipline, grit, willpower, control of myself, right? Who am I to instill self-belief in somebody if I don't have any self-belief myself, if I'm filled with self-doubt? That makes no sense. So as trainers and nutrition coaches, as fitness professionals, it's very, very important that you practice what you preach so you can develop those skills, and then you can not only teach those skills, but you can relate to the shoes your clients in, and they will respect you more, they will trust you more, they will buy in more, and they will transform more because of the work you put in for your physical results first. Get me going when I talk about this topic. It's something I'm very passionate about because I think there's just too many, dare I say, soft coaches and trainers and people in the industry, and they're just so afraid of challenge. It just blows my mind. We are in the business of challenge. We are in the business of creating change. And if we're going to create change in others, we got to create change in ourselves first. So, and man, this is such a great question to end on. This is going to be the last question of this, the podcast. But I think the biggest thing that is holding most coaches back, or the thing that they're lacking most today in the industry, is 100% their willingness to do the work and 100% their own results for themselves. That's like tip number one in marketing, right? If you're going to think about marketing and advertising and content creation, how about you start by just looking the part, being a billboard of your own product? Oh, and then you should be a really good coach. And this is the other thing. They always go to like social media strategies, and like they go to business coaches and they're like, I got to figure out a scale and the systems. And I'm like, hey, like, let me see your transformations. Like, do you know how to coach? Because you shouldn't be worrying about scaling and marketing and content creation strategies and advertising or anything like that. If you're not getting results, if you're not passionate about what you do and people can feel it every time you talk about it, and you're not getting people results so great that they want to tell others about you, or even better, they don't even have to tell others and refer you because people are asking them, what are you doing? You look phenomenal. Then you're putting the cart before the horse, right? And so the two things that I think people in the industry get so twisted and they're just lacking right now is their grit and their ability to do the work themselves and create the result in their own body before they try to help others. And then the other aspect is running to these business and social media and marketing and advertising strategists and strategies, and these strategists prey on them in the industry, unfortunately. But they go to that stuff as if that's the answer to creating a big business when they're not even good coaches. They don't even get good results. Let me see your transformations before you try to run an ad on Facebook. Okay, I'm jumping off my horse because now I'm gonna start screaming at the mic. We're going to wrap it up there. 40 minutes in. Great Q&A. Great starting podcast. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you leave this podcast a 5-star rating and review on Spotify or Apple, whichever one you're listening to. I cannot tell you how humbled I am and how honored I am to be on the mic talking to you today, and for you to take my words of wisdom, my guidance, and my lessons about training and nutrition and apply them in your life to make your life better, to make your body better, to get better results and create the tailored life, because that's what this is all about. As always, I appreciate you guys listening, and I will catch you next time.